Micro second. Well, actually, we think we might have plans here. You're welcome to join us, of course, but it'll be chaos. And if the other option is a cruise in hot weather, then... Oh, no, darling. We don't want to leave you at Christmas. Una and I would love to come to you. It'll be super having Christmas with the little ones. It's such a hard time for us both. Gah! How could I possibly handle Mum, Una and the kids with no help? As Chloe was going on a Tai Chi retreat to Goa with Graham. Did not want it to end up like last year, with me trying to stop my heart from breaking into pieces at doing Santa without Mark and sobbing behind the kitchen counter, whilst Mum and Una squabbled over lumps in the gravy and commented on my parenting and housekeeping, as if, rather than inviting them for Christmas, I had called them in as systems analysts. "Let me think about it," I said. "Well, the thing is, darling, we have to reserve the berths by tomorrow." "Go ahead and book it for just you, Mum. Honestly, because I haven't worked out... Well, you can cancel with 14 days' notice," she said. "Okay, then," I said. "Okay." Great. An over-50s cruise for Christmas. Everything looks so dark and gloomy. 11 p.m. Was still wearing my prescription sunglasses. That's better. Maybe I have just been like a wave, building momentum, and now I have crashed, and another will come along soon. For, as it says in Men Are From Mars, Women Are From Venus, women are like waves, and men are like rubber bands, which ping away to their caves and come back. Except mine didn't come back. 11:15 p.m. Look. Stop it. For as it says on the Dalai Lama's Twitter, at Dalai Lama, we cannot avoid pain, we cannot avoid loss. Contentment comes from the ease and flexibility with which we move through change. Maybe we'll go to yoga and become more flexible. Or maybe we'll go out with friends and get plastered. A plan. Sunday, 2nd of September, 2012. Alcohol units, 5. But hard to tell with mojitos. Maybe 500? "It's time," said Tom, settling into his fourth mojito in Quo Vadis. "We're taking her to the Stronghold." The Stronghold has recently become a regular part of Tom's micro-universe. Run by a client from his therapy practice, it is an illegal American-style speakeasy in Hoxton. "It's like being in an incredibly well-directed music video," Tom enthused, eyes shining. "There's every age group, young and old, black and white, gay and straight. Gwyneth's been seen there, and it's a pop-up." "Oh, please," said Talitha. "How many minutes till the edginess of pop-up anything has popped down?" "Anyway," said Jude, "who bothers to meet people in real life anymore?" "But Jude... There are actual live people there, and Americana bands and sofas you can talk and dance and make out with people. Why would you do all that before you found out in one click whether they're divorced or separated with kids, like bungee jumping, more than going to the movies, know how to spell, know not to use the expression LOL or special lady without irony, and whether they think the world would be a better place if people with low IQs were not allowed to reproduce? Well, at least you'll know they're not a photograph from 15 years ago, said Tom. "We're going," said Talitha. "Upshot is, we are off to the Stronghold in Hoxton on Thursday." Wednesday, 5th of September, 2012. Acts of screenplay written, 2.5. Attempts to find babysitter, 5. Babysitters found, 0. 9:15 p.m. Disaster. Forgot to ask Chloe about babysitting tomorrow, and she's going to watch Graham compete in the South of England Tai Chi semi-final. I'd love to help Bridget, but Tai Chi means an enormous amount to Graham. I can definitely do the school run on Friday morning, though, so you can sleep in. What am I going to do? Cannot ask Tom, as he's coming to the Stronghold, ditto Jude and Talitha. Plus, Talitha does not do children, since, she says... She has done that, and only uses hers if she needs a walker for charity auctions. 9:30 p.m. Just called Mum. Oh, darling, I'd love to, but it's the Viva supper tomorrow. We're doing ham in Coca-Cola. Everyone is doing things in Coca-Cola now. I'm slumped at kitchen table, trying not to think about everyone doing things in Coca-Cola in the Viva spa. It's so unfair. I'm trying my best to rediscover myself as a woman, but now I'm up shit creek without a... Oh! What about Daniel? A Daniel in shining armour. Wednesday, 5th of September, 2012. Continued. Jones, you little devil, growled Daniel when I called. What are you wearing? What colour are your knickers? And how are my godchildren? Daniel Cleaver, my former emotional fuckwit boyfriend and Mark's former arch-enemy, has, to his credit, really done his best to help since Mark was killed. After years of bitter one-upmanship, when Billy arrived, the two of them finally made it up, and Daniel is actually the children's godfather. Daniel's best isn't exactly everyone's best. The last time he had them to stay, it turned out he just wanted to impress some girl by boasting that he had godchildren, and suffice it to say, he dropped them off at school 3 hours late. And when I picked up Mabel later, her hair was in an incredibly complex plaited chignon. Mabel, what fabulous hair, I said, imagining Daniel had brought John Frieda in to do full hair and makeup on Mabel at 7:30 a.m. The teacher did it, said Mabel. Daniel brushed my hair with a fork, adding, it had maple syrup on it.
Jones? You still there, Jones?
Yes, I said, startled. Babysitting call, Jones?
Would you? Absolutely. When were you thinking?
I cringed. Tomorrow? There was a slight pause. Daniel was obviously doing something.
Tomorrow night is absolutely fine. I find myself at a loose end, having been rejected by all human women under the age of 84.
Oh, we might be quite late. Is that okay?
My dear girl, I am nocturnal.
You won't... I mean, you won't bring a model or...
No. Jones, I shall be a model. A paragon of babysitting. Ludo, wholesome vitamin-packed fare, and, by the way...
Yes, I said suspiciously.
What kind of knickers are you wearing at this moment? Are they mummy pants? Mummy's lovely mummy panties? Will you show them to Daddy tomorrow night?
Still love Daniel, though obviously not to the point that I would get involved with any of his crap. The Perfect Babysitter. Thursday, 6th of September, 2012. £133, VG. Alcohol units, 4. Sexual encounters in last 5 years, 0. Sexual encounters in last 5 hours, 2. Embarrassing sexual encounters in last 5 hours, 2. The day of the Stronghold outing was upon us. Billy was wildly excited that Daniel was coming.
Will Amanda be here?
Who's Amanda?
The lady with the big boobies who was there last time.
No, I said.
Mabel, what are you looking for? My hairbrush, she said darkly.
Managed somehow in the excitement to get them bathed and asleep, and scrambled to get ready before Daniel arrived. I had opted for jeans, a brand chillingly called Not Your Daughter's Jeans, and a cowboy shirt, thinking it would fit in with the Americana theme. Daniel arrived late, in his usual suit, hair shorter now, still gorgeous, with that irresistible smile, bearing armfuls of unsuitable gifts, toy guns, semi-naked Barbies, giant bags of sweets, Krispy Kreme donuts, and a suspicious-looking half-hidden DVD, which I decided to ignore, as I was cataclysmically late now.
Ding dong. Jones, he said. Have you been on a diet? I thought I'd never see you looking like this again.
It's horrifying how differently some people treat you when you're fat to when you're not, and when you're all done up and when you're just normal. No wonder women are so insecure. I know men are too, but when one is a woman,
With all the tools at a modern woman's disposal, one can literally look like a completely different person from one half hour to the next. Even then, you think you don't look like you should. Sometimes look at billboards of beautiful models and the real people underneath, and think it's a bit like if we were on a planet where all the space creatures were short, green and fat, except a very few of them were tall, thin and yellow, and all the advertising was of the tall yellow ones, airbrushed to make them even taller and yellower. So all the little green space creatures spent their whole time feeling sad because they weren't tall, thin and yellow. Jones, are you still inhabiting your head? I said I suppose a fuck would be out of the question. Yes, I said, jerking back to the present. Yes, it would. Though this is in no way a sign of my lack of gratitude for the babysit. Rattled through a gabble of instructions and thanks and shot out of the door, feeling outraged as a feminist by Daniel's complex, fattest pass, but uplifted as a female. When I arrived at Talitha's, however, Tom burst out laughing. Seriously? Dolly Parton? You can't rely on your arse in jeans at our age, said Talitha briskly, sweeping in with a tray of mojitos. You've got to have something else going on. I don't want to look like mutton, I said, or a prostitute. Well, quite. But you need something to start the idea of sexuality. Legs or boobs, not both. What about one leg and one boob? Said Tom. Eventually, I ended up in a very expensive, short black silk tunic of Talitha's and insanely high Yves Saint Laurent thigh boots. But I can't walk in them. Honey, said Talitha, you're not going to need to walk. In the cab, started to think about how much Mark would have loved the thigh boots. Stop it, said Tom, seeing my face. He would want you to have a life. Next, I started to panic about the children. Talitha, who has known Daniel since Sit Up Britain days, took out her phone and texted. Daniel, please reassure Bridget that the children are fine and asleep, and you will text the moment they're not. No reply. We all stared nervously at the phone. Oh, Daniel doesn't text, I said, suddenly remembering, then added, giggling, he's too old. Talitha put her mobile on speakerphone and called him. Daniel, you bloody old bastard. Talitha, my dear girl, the very thought of you finds me suddenly, unaccountably over-aroused. What are you up to at this moment, and what colour are your panties? Grrr. And he was supposed to be babysitting. I'm with Bridget, she said dryly. How's it going? Yep, all perfectly splendid. Children fast asleep. And patrolling the doors, windows and corridors like a sentry. I shall be impeccable. Good. She clicked off the phone. You see, it will all be fine. Now, stop worrying. The Stronghold. The Stronghold was in a brick warehouse with an unmarked metal door and a buzzer with a code. Tom punched in the code, and we teetered in our insane heels up a concrete staircase which smelt as if somebody had weed in it. But once we got in, as Tom gave our names for the guest list, I felt a reckless surge of excitement. The walls were brick. There were bales of straw round the edges, which made me slightly wish I'd remained as Dolly Parton, and battered sofas. There was a band playing, and a bar in the corner, manned by youths, who were adding to the atmosphere by looking around nervously, as if a sheriff was going to tie up his horse, burst in a cowboy hat, and break it all up. It was hard to make the people out in the artistic lighting, but it was instantly clear that they weren't all teenagers, and that there were some very hot men in the room, murmured Talitha. Come on, girl, said Tom. Get back on that horse. I'm too old, I said. So? It's practically pitch black. What am I going to talk about? I gabbled. I'm not au fait with popular music. Bridget, said Talitha, we are gathered here to rediscover your inner sensual woman. This has nothing whatsoever to do with talking. It felt like going back to being a teenager, with the same leaping sense of doubt and possibility. It reminded me of the parties I used to go to when I was 16.
when, as soon as the parents had dropped us off, the lights would go out and everyone would get on the floor and start snogging anyone with whom they had made the most perfunctory eye contact.
"Look at him," said Tom. "He's looking at you. He's looking at you." "Tom, shut up," I said out of the side of my mouth, folding my arms across my chest and trying to tug the tunic down to reach the thigh boots. "Pull yourself together, Bridget. Do something."
I forced myself to look across with an attempt at smoulderingness. The cute guy was, however, now making out with a stunning eye babe in short shorts and an off-the-shoulder sweater.
"Oh, my God, that's disgusting. She's an embryo," said Jude.
Call me old-fashioned, but I did read in Glamour that one's shorts should always be longer than one's vagina, murmured Talitha. We all became crestfallen, our confidence collapsing like a house of cards.
"Oh, God, do we just look like an ensemble of elderly transvestites?" said Tom.
"It's happened, just as I always feared," I said. "We've ended up as tragic old fools, convincing ourselves the vicar is in love with us because he's mentioned his organ."
"Darlings," said Talitha, "I forbid you to continue in this vein."
Talitha, Tom and Jude went off to dance, while I sulked on a hay bale, thinking, I want to go home and snuggle my babies, and hear their quiet breathing, and know who I am and what I stand for, shamelessly using the children to gloss over me being old and past it. Then, a pair of legs in jeans sat down beside me on the hay bale. I caught a scent of a man, darling, as Talitha would put it, as he leaned into my hair.
"Do you want to dance?"
It was as simple as that. I didn't need to formulate a plan, work out what to say, or indeed do anything, but look up into his attractive brown eyes and nod. He took my hand and hoisted me up with a strong arm. He kept hold of my waist as we walked towards the floor, which was fortunate, given the thigh boots. Thankfully, it was a slow dance, or I would have broken an ankle. He had a crinkly smile and looked in the darkness like the sort of man who appears in adverts for SUVs. He was wearing a leather jacket. He put his hand on my waist and pulled me into him. As I laid my arm on his shoulder, I suddenly realized what Tom and Talitha were on about. Sex. It's just sex. Flashes and pulses of long-forgotten lust started running through me, like Frankenstein's monster when he was plugged into the electricity, only more romantic and sensual. And I found myself instinctively slipping my fingers to feel the hair on the stranger's collar, the skin on the back of his neck. He pulled me even closer to him, making it unmistakable that he was into sex at least with someone. As we turned slowly to the music, I saw Tom and Talitha staring at me with a mixture of awe and astonishment. I felt like a 14-year-old who'd pulled her first boy. I made a face to stop them doing anything stupid as I felt him slowly, irresistibly, in manner of Mills and Boone hero, moving his lips to find mine. And then we were kissing. Suddenly, everything started going crazy. It was like driving a very fast car in a pair of stilettos. Nothing had stopped functioning, despite years in the garage. One minute, I was blocked at every turn, and in a flash there were zero restraints. And what was I doing? What about the children? And what about Mark? And who was this impertinent man anyway?
"Let's go somewhere quieter," he murmured.
It was all a plot. Why else would he have asked me to dance? He was planning to murder me and then eat me. "I've got to go. Now."
"What?"
I looked up at him, terrified. It was midnight. I was Cinderella, and I had to get back to the cots and the nannies and the sleeplessness and sense of being totally asexual and staring down the barrel of single life till the end of my days. But wasn't that better than being murdered? "Awfully sorry. Must be going. Jolly good, thanks."
"Go," he said. "Oh, God, that face."
Even as I was stumbling down the wee-smelling stairs, I was becoming puffed up by his last phrase.
"That face."
I was Kate Moss. I was Cheryl Cole. Once in the minicab, however, explaining the whole incident, a glance at my wild expression and drink-bloated features, mascara smeared under the eyes, somewhat ruined the concept.
He means tormented by the face of a geriatric mother who's decided he's planning to murder her because he's kissed her, shrieked Tom.
And then eat her, added Talitha, as everyone fell about laughing.
What were you thinking? Said Jude, giggling hysterically. He was hot.
It's all right, said Talitha,
recovering her composure and trying to settle elegantly back into the minicab seat, which smelt of curry.
I got his number.
12:10 a.m. Just got back and crept into house. Everything was quiet and dark. Where was Daniel? 12:20 a.m. Tiptoed downstairs and turned on the light. The basement looked like a bomb had hit it. The Xbox was still going. There were Sylvanian bunnies arranged in a line from one end to the other. Barbies, toy dinosaurs and machine guns, cushions, pizza cartons, Krispy Kreme donut bags and chocolate wrappers all over the floor, and a tub of melted chocolate fudge Haagen-Dazs upside down on the sofa. They would probably throw up in the night, but at least they'd had a good time. But where was Daniel? Crept up to their room. They were fast asleep, chocolate all over their faces, but breathing peacefully. No Daniel. Started to panic. Rushed down to the sofa bed in the sitting room. Nothing. Rushed back up to my bedroom, opened the door, and let out a noise. Daniel was in the bed. He raised his head and squinted through the darkness.
Good God, Jones, he said. Could those possibly be thigh boots? Could I take a closer look?
He pulled back the sheet. He was half naked.
Come on in, Jones, he said. I promise I won't lay a finger on you.
The whole combination of being slightly drunk, aroused by a recent kiss, and Daniel half naked and devilish in the half light, made me flash back to being a 30-something singleton. A split second later, I was giggling and lurching into bed in the thigh boots.
Now, Jones, began Daniel, these are very, very naughty boots, and this is a very, very silly little tunic.
And then another split second later, I fast-forwarded back to the present moment and remembered, well, everything, really.
Gah, can't do this, terribly sorry, jolly good, I gabbled, leaping out of the bed.
Daniel stared, then started laughing.
Jones, Jones, Jones. You're completely bonkers as usual.
I waited outside the door while he got up and dressed, and then, in the midst of my apologies and thanks for the babysitting, there was another moment when I felt so confused and turned on, I almost jumped on him again and started devouring him like an animal. Then, his mobile rang.
Sorry, sorry, he said into the phone. No, my plumptious. Just got terribly stuck at work.
Look, I know.
Fuck!
Cross Daniel now.
Look, Jesus, I said I had a presentation. It's a huge big deal for the project and... Okay, okay. I'll be back in 15 minutes. Yes. Yes. I long for your orb-like radiance.
Orb-like radiance?
I long to plunge myself into...
Sighing with relief that I hadn't succumbed to the old routine, I managed to get him out of the door, then wrestled Talitha's thigh boots off. I cleared up the sitting room, enough to not make Chloe hand in her notice in despair tomorrow, and sank into the empty bed. 12:55 a.m. But now feeling all restless and aroused. Feel like it has gone from total man desert to, in the space of one evening, literally... Raining men. Aftermath. Friday, 7th of September, 2012. 7 a.m. Am stark naked, with clouting headache, and have got to do school run. 7:01 a.m. No, do not have to do school run. Was special treat this morning to lie in,
but have woken up anyway.
7:02 a.m.
Gah! Just remembered what happened last night with Leather Jacket Man and Daniel.
7:30 a.m. Traumatized by sounds of Chloe downstairs doing all the things that I'm supposed to do. The one Weetabix that Mabel is allowed to put one teaspoon of sugar on herself. The two slices of bacon for Billy with ketchup, but no bread.
7:45 a.m.
Feel terribly guilty, like hungover Joan Crawford figure about to drift down in a housecoat with lipstick smeared all over my face saying, "Hello, darlings, I'm your mummy. Remember, what are your names again?"
8 a.m. Door bangs. Noises stop.
8:01 a.m. Door opens. Noises restart. A search for Mabel's book bag.
8:05 a.m.
Door slams again.
8:15 a.m.
Silence. Bed is all cool and white and is delicious just lying here naked doing nothing. Feel like a spell has been broken. Like sleeping, well, not beauty exactly. Sleeping quite old person with two children, awoken by a kiss. Spring has touched the withered wintry branches. Leaves and blossoms are bursting out and unfurling left, right and centre.
8:30 a.m.
Texting ping. Maybe Talitha. Texting Leather Jacket Man's number. Maybe even Leather Jacket Man himself, making joke to diffuse whole situation and asking me out. Am sexually viable. It was the infants branch. Please remember to bring the zoo trip permission slip in this afternoon.
Women change their minds. Saturday, 8th of September, 2012. Annoying electronic devices in house, 74. Electronic devices which beep, 7. Electronic devices I know how to operate, 0. Electronic devices requiring passwords, 12. Passwords, 18. Passwords that can remember, 0. Minutes spent thinking about sex, 342.
7:30 a.m. Just woke up from delicious, sensual dream, all mixed up with Daniel and Leather Jacket Man. Suddenly feel different, sensual, womanly. And yet that makes me feel so guilty, as if I'm being unfaithful to Mark. And yet, is so sensual, feeling like a sensual woman with a sensual side which is sensually...
Oh, children are awake.
11:30 a.m. Entire morning has been totally sensual and peaceful. Started day with all three of us in my bed, cuddling and watching telly. Then had breakfast, then played hide and seek, then coloured in moshy monsters, then did obstacle course, all in pyjamas, while roast chicken emitted delicious fragrance from the aga.
11:32 a.m.
Am perfect mother and sensual woman with sensual possibilities. I mean, maybe someone like Leather Jacket Man could join in with this scenario and...
11:33 a.m.
Billy.
Can we do computer? Now it's Saturday.
11:34 a.m.
Mabel. Want to watch SpongeBob?
11:35 a.m. Suddenly overwhelmed with exhaustion and desire to read papers in echoing silence, just for 10 minutes.
Mummy! The TV's broken!
Realised, horrified, Mabel had got hold of the remotes. I started jabbing at buttons, at which white flecks appeared, accompanied by loud crackling.
Snow!
Said Mabel excitedly, just as the dishwasher started beeping.
Mummy, said Billy, the computer's run out of charge.
Well, plug it in again, I said, shoving my head into the cupboard full of wires under the telly.
Night,
said Mabel, as the TV screen went black and the tumble dryer joined in the beeping.
This charger doesn't work.
Well, go on the Xbox.
It's not working.
Maybe it's the internet connection.
Mummy, I've unplugged the AirPort. I can't get it in again.
Realising my thermostat was veering dangerously towards red,
I scampered off up the stairs saying, "Time to get dressed. Special treat. I'll get your clothes." Then ran into their bedroom and burst out, "I hate fucking technology. Why can't everyone just fucking shut up and let me read the papers?" Suddenly, horrified, saw that the baby monitor was on. Oh, God. Oh, God. Should have got rid of it ages ago, but paranoid a single parent, fear of death, etc., etc. Ran downstairs to find Billy racked by sobs. "Oh, Billy, I'm so sorry. I didn't mean it. Was it the baby monitor?" "No," he yelled. "The Xbox is frozen." "Mabel, did you hear Mummy and the baby monitor?"
"No," she said, staring delightedly at the television. "The TV is mended."
It was showing a page asking for the Virgin TV password.
"Billy, what's the Virgin password?" I said.
"Isn't it the same as your bank card? 1066.
"Okay. I'll do the Xbox. You put in the password," I said, just as the doorbell rang.
"That password won't work."
"Mommy," said Mabel.
"Shh, both of you," I rasped. "There's someone at the door." Ran up the stairs, head a mass of guilty thoughts. I'm a terrible mother. There is a hole inside them left by the loss of their father, which they are trying to fill with technology. And opened the door. It was Jude, looking glamorous, but hungover and tearful.
"Oh, Bridge," she said, falling into my arms. "I just can't stand another Saturday morning on my own."
"What happened? Tell Mummy," I said, and then remembered Jude was a grown-up financial giant. "The guy I met on Match and went out with the day before the stronghold, the one I made out with?"
"Yes," I said, trying to vaguely remember which one.
"He didn't call. And then last night he copied me in on a global text saying his wife has just had a baby girl 6 pounds 12 ounces.
"Oh, my God, that's disgusting. That's inhuman. All these years I didn't want children, and people kept saying I'd change my mind. They were right. I'm going to get my eggs unfrozen."
"Jude," I said, "you made a choice. Just because some guy is a fuckwit, it doesn't mean it was the wrong choice. It's a good choice for you. Children are...
I glanced murderously back down the stairs. She held out her phone, showing an Instagram picture of the fuckwit holding his baby. "Cuddly and sweet and pink and 6 pounds 12 ounces. And all I do is work and hook up. And I'm all on my own on a Saturday morning and..."
"Come downstairs," I said lugubriously. "I'll show you cuddly and sweet." We clomped back down. Billy and Mabel were now standing cherub-like, holding out a drawing saying, "We love you, Mummy."
"We're going to empty the dishwasher, Mummy," said Billy, "to help you."
Shit. What was wrong with them?
"Thank you, children," I purred, bustling Jude back upstairs and outside the front door before they did something worse, like emptying the recycling bin.
"I'm going to defrost my eggs," sobbed Jude, as we sat down on the steps. "The technology was primitive then, crude even. But it might work if... I could get a sperm donor and..."
Suddenly, the upstairs window in the house opposite shot open, and a pair of Xbox remotes hurtled out, landing with a smash next to the dustbins. Seconds later, the front door was flung open, and the bohemian neighbour appeared, dressed in fluffy pink mules, a Victorian nightdress and a small bowler hat, carrying an armful of laptops, iPads and iPods. She teetered down the front steps and shoved the electronics in the dustbin, with her son and two of his friends following her wailing,
"No, I haven't finished my level!"
"Good," she yelled. "When I signed up for having children, I did not sign up to be ruled by a collection of inanimate, thin black objects and a gaggle of techno crackheads refusing to do anything but stare with jabbing thumbs while demanding that I service them like a computer tech crossed with a 5-star hotel concierge. When I didn't have you, everyone spent the whole time saying I'd change my mind. And guess what? I've had you, I've brought you up, and I've changed my mind." I stared at her, thinking, I have to be friends with that woman. Children of your age, in India, live entirely successfully as street urchins, she continued. So you can just sit on this doorstep, and instead of putting your entire brains into getting to the next level on Minecraft, you can apply them to changing my mind about letting you back in. And don't you dare touch that dustbin, or I'll enter you in the Hunger Games. Then, with a toss of her bowler-hatted head, she flounced back into the house and slammed the door. "Mommy! Mommy!" Shouting and crying erupted from my own basement. "Mommy!" "Want to come back in?" I said to Jude. "No. No, it's fine," Jude said, happy now, getting to her feet. "You're completely right. I have made the right choice. Just a bit hungover. I need to have breakfast and a Bloody Mary at Soho House and read the papers and I'll be fine. Thanks, Bridge. Love you. Bye." Then she teetered off in her Versace knee-high gladiator sandals, looking hungoverly fabulous. I looked back across the street. The three boys were sitting in a line on the doorstep. "Everything all right?" I said. The dark-haired son grinned. "Yeah, it's fine. She just gets like this. She'll be all right in a minute." He glanced behind him to check the door was still closed and pulled an iPod out of his pocket. Then the boys started giggling and bent over the iPod. Huge wave of relief washed over me. I bounded cheerfully back, suddenly remembering that the password for everything was 1890, the year in which Chekhov wrote Hedda Gabler. "Mummy!" I grabbed the Xbox remote, grabbed the Virgin remote, and typed 1890 into both of them, at which the screens burst miraculously into life. "There," I said. "There's your screens. You don't need me. You just need screens. I am going to make myself a cup of coffee." I flung the remote onto the armchair and flounced bohemian neighbour-like towards the kettle, at which Billy and Mabel started giggling. "Mummy," laughed Billy, "you've turned everything off again." 8:30 p.m. Ended up all cosy and good, and Billy had his Xbox time, and Mabel watched SpongeBob and cuddled me on the sofa. Then we all went up on Hampstead Heath, and I kept thinking about Leather Jacket Man, and how gorgeous it was having the kiss, and feeling sexy again, and thinking maybe Tom is right, that I do need to be a woman and have someone in my life, and maybe it wouldn't be wrong. And maybe I will call Talitha and get his number. Crashing Wave. Sunday, 9th of September, 2012. £135. Calories, 3,250. Number of times checked for texts from Leather Jacket Man, 27. Texts from Leather Jacket Man, 0. Guilty thoughts, 47. 2 a.m. Everything is terrible. Texted Talitha. Turns out she not only took Leather Jacket Man's number, but gave him my number. Feel stab of insecurity in my stomach. If she gave him my number, then why hasn't he called? 5 a.m. Should never, ever have got involved with men again. Had completely forgotten the nightmare of why hasn't he called? 9:15 p.m. Children are asleep and all ready for Monday morning. But I am in total meltdown. Why hasn't Leather Jacket Man texted? Why? Clearly Leather Jacket Man thinks I am crazy and old. It's all my own fault. I should be simply a mother. The children should come home every day to find a casserole bubbling on the aga and steamed jam roly-poly for pudding. I'd read them Swallows and Amazons, put them to bed and then... What, though? Watch Downton Abbey, fantasize about sex with Matthew, and start again in the morning with the Weetabix. 9:16 p.m. Just called Talitha and explained the whole thing. She is coming round. 9:45 p.m. Now get me a drink, please. I fix her usual vodka and soda. This has all been set off because one guy you've met for 5 seconds hasn't texted you. You've opened yourself to the possibility of life, and now it seems to have been snatched away from under your nose.
Why don't you text him?
Never pursue a man. It will only make you unhappy, I said, reciting our mantra from being single in our 30s. Angelica Houston never, ever called Jack Nicholson.
Darling, you have to understand that you have no idea what you're talking about. Everything has changed since you were single. There was no texting. There were no emails. People spoke on telephones. Plus, young women are more sexually aggressive now, and men are naturally more lazy. You have to, at the very least, encourage.
Don't send anything, I said, lunging at the phone.
I won't, but it's all fine. When I swapped your numbers, I had a discreet word with him and told him you'd been widowed.
You what?
It's better than being divorced. It's so romantic and original.
So basically, you're using Mark's death to procure me a man. There was the thud of feet on the stairs. Billy appeared in his striped pyjamas. Mummy, I haven't done my maths.
Talitha looked up vaguely, then returned to the phone.
Say, hello, nice to see you again, to Talitha, and look at her eyes, I said reflexively.
Why do parents do this?
Say please, say hello, say thank you for having me. If you haven't trained them to do these things before they get into a live situation, then there's really no point in...
Hello, Talitha.
Hello, darling, said Talitha, without looking up.
He's adorable.
You did do your maths, Billy. Remember the problems? We did them when you came home from school on Friday.
Okay, how about this?
Talitha looked up, then looked back at the phone again.
But there was another sheet, said Billy. Look, here. It's craft and design.
Not craft and design.
Billy has spent the last 6 weeks constructing a small mouse out of bits of felt. Then he gets sheets, which ask mysterious conceptual questions. I looked at the latest sheet. What do you want to achieve by making the mouse?
Billy and I looked at each other desperately.
How global do they expect you to go with a question like that? I mean, in a philosophical sense. I handed Billy a pencil. He sat down at the kitchen table and wrote, then handed me the sheet.
To make a mouse.
Good, I said. Very good. Now shall I take you back up to bed? He nodded and put his hand in mine.
Good night, Talitha.
Say good night to Talitha.
Mummy, I just did.
Mabel was asleep on the bottom bunk, head on back to front, clutching saliva.
Will you cuddle me? Said Billy, climbing into the top bunk.
I thought about Talitha getting increasingly impatient downstairs, then climbed in, with him, Puffle One, Mario, and Horsio.
Mummy?
Yes, I said, heart wavering, fearing he was going to ask about Daddy or death.
What is the population of China?
Oh, God, he looks so like Mark when he's worrying about these questions.
What was I doing messing about texting some unshaven, leather-jacketed stranger who probably...
Mummy?
400 million, I lied smoothly.
Oh. Why is the Earth shrinking by 1 centimetre a year?
I thought about this. Is the world shrinking by 1 centimetre a year? Like the whole planet or just the land bits? Is it to do with global warming? Or the awesome power of waves and... Then I felt the slight relaxing sigh of Billy falling asleep. Rushed back downstairs panting. Talitha looked up with a self-satisfied expression.
Okay, I hope you appreciate this. This was a really tough one.
She handed me the phone. I finally recovered from my embarrassment at fleeing from Prince Charming and his stronghold. It was also outrageously sensual. I feared I would spontaneously combust or turn into a pumpkin. What are you up to?
You haven't sent it.
Not yet, but it's good. You have to take care of their ego. What do you think the poor guy felt like, with you running off like that and not explaining yourself?
Well, doesn't that sound...
It's a question, and carrying on the thread. Don't overthink it, just... She took hold of my finger and pressed send.
No, you said you wouldn't.
I didn't. You sent it. Could I possibly have another teensy, teensy little vodka?
Mind reeling, I headed for the fridge. But just as I opened the door, there was a text ping. Talitha grabbed it. A self-satisfied smirk spread across her immaculately made-up features.
Hi. Is that Cinderella?
Now, Bridget, she said sternly, watching the confusion of feelings on my face. You have to be brave and get back in the saddle for everyone's sake, including... She nodded in the direction of upstairs. Ultimately, Talitha was right, but it couldn't have gone more disastrously wrong with Leather Jacket Man. As she herself said as we sat on my sofa in the bloody aftermath, it's all my fault. I forgot to warn you. When you come out of a long relationship, the first one is always the worst. There's too much hanging on it. You think you're going to be rescued, which you're not. And you think they're the barometers of whether you're still viable, which you are, but they're not going to prove that to you. I broke every single one of the key dating rules with Leather Jacket Man. But in my defense, at that point, I didn't know that the dating rules even existed. How not to do dating. Wednesday, the 12th of September, 2012. £133. Lost £2 through texting thumb action. Minutes spent fantasizing about Leather Jacket Man, 347. Number of times checked for texts from Leather Jacket Man, 37. Texts from Leather Jacket Man, 0. Number of times checked unexploded email inbox from Leather Jacket Man, even though Leather Jacket Man does not have email address, 12. Insane. Total cumulative minutes late for school runs, 27. 2:30 p.m. Just back from lunch with Leather Jacket Man in Primrose Hill. He was looking even more like a car advert man, in a brown leather jacket this time, and aviator shades. It was an unseasonably warm, bright autumn day. The sky blue, the sun shining, so we could sit outside at a pavement cafe. Fine. I love him. I love him. Not fine. He's about my age and divorced with two kids, and he's called Andy. Such a cool name. Andy. As I sat down at the table, he took off his shades. His eyes were like pools, pools of pale, pale water like a tropical sea. Do not get carried away. Only brown. I love him. The dating gods have smiled down on me. Try to retain some vestige of objectivity. He really understands the problems of single parenting. He said things like, "How old are your kids?" All through lunch, felt like some dangerously aroused puppy who was going to start shagging his leg. Do not jump to conclusions or fantasize. It'll be so great having sex together on Sunday mornings, I was thinking. Then breakfast together with all the kids, laughing, moving in together, selling both our places, and getting a house they can all walk to school from. Just as I was thinking, then we could just have one car and not have an issue with parking permits, he interrupted. Do you want a coffee? I blinked at him, disorientated, teetering on the brink of saying, do you think we could manage with just the one car? On the first date, let him pay. When the bill came, I made a terrible fuss about getting my credit card out and saying, no, let me, and shall we split it? I'll get it, he said, looking at me in a funny way. Maybe he already knew he loved me too. Respond to what is actually happening, not what you wish was happening. After lunch, I couldn't bear it to end, and suggested we go for a walk on the hill. It was so lovely. When we got to his car, I was hoping against hope that he was going to kiss me again, but he just gave me a quick peck on the cheek and said, take care. I panicked. Do you think we should see each other again? I blurted out. Maybe it was a bit forward, but think it was completely fine. It wasn't. Sure, he smirked. I was just waiting for you to run off screaming. Then he smiled his crinkly car advert smile and got into the car. He's so funny. Do not allow him to disrupt your life or equilibrium. Oh, look, this is hopeless. Cannot just lie in bed masturbating all day when have a screenplay to write and children to care for. Thursday, the 13th of September, 2012. Do not obsess or fantasize when driving. 8:30 a.m. The thing is, when I said, do you think we should see each other again, he didn't say no, he said sure. So that means yes, doesn't it? But then, why didn't he say something about the next time when we said goodbye? Or why hasn't he texted? 9:30 a.m. Rounded a bend to find a taxi had just stopped in front of me, completely selfishly, with no rhyme or reason whatsoever. Was huge line of cars behind me. Pulled round the taxi, looking crossly at taxi driver. Then realised, as looked ahead, was yet another car steaming towards me, driven by man who was pointing and mouthing at me, "You go back! You go back!" as if was idiot or similar. Honestly, men drivers, I thought, doing a V-sign at the man. Apart from leather jacket man, who I'm certain is very respectful. Oh, look at us. We're alpha males. We're just going to bear down on defenceless women, bullying them into reversing. Mummy, said Billy, the taxi has stopped so that that other car can get round us. Suddenly realised what Billy meant. The oncoming car was already there, and the taxi driver, who is, after all, an experienced roadsman, was stopping to let the already oncoming car come past. And now I was like the alpha female SUV driver, except not in SUV, who had swerved round the experienced roadsman taxi driver and tried to drive the oncoming car backwards like an angry snowplough brandishing an Oxbridge first in PPE, except third in English from Bangor. Tried to mouth, sorry, while reversing backwards, but the man glared at me with exactly the same disbelieving what-is-the-world-coming-to expression that I myself am so accustomed to adopting during the morning school run. Well, I said brightly, once we'd rounded the corner, what lessons have we got today, Billy? P.E.? Mummy. I looked round at him. The same eyes, the same tone, when I'm being not altogether at my best. What? I said. Are you just saying that because you feel silly? Friday, the 14th of September, 2012. Do not allow him to make you generally distracted and crazy. Just made contact with aspirational bohemian neighbour and was so distracted that completely fucked it up. Was just walking back from car when saw her going into the house wearing a woolen hat with several points with bobbles on the end, platform Doc Martens, and a garment which looked like cross between a German officer's coat from the Second World War and a crinoline with a frill at the bottom. Hello, she suddenly said. I'm Rebecca. Don't you live across the road? Yes, I said, delightedly, then launched into a nervous monologue. Your children look like they might be the same age as mine. How old are they? What a nice hat! It all went very well, and ended with Rebecca saying, well, maybe knock on the door and come for a play date. Doesn't the very word make you want to shoot yourself sometime? It does, yes, I said, miming embarrassingly shooting my own head. That would be cool. Bye! Then crossed the road and went into the house thinking, yay, we can be friends, and maybe I could introduce her to Leather Jacket Man and... Wait! Rebecca suddenly called. I turned. Isn't that your daughter? Shit! Had completely forgotten I had Mabel with me. She was standing bemused outside Rebecca's house, abandoned on the pavement. Notice how he makes you feel. Somewhere, amidst list, horny, taking stomach medicine due to anxiety, there should be the word happy. 9:15 p.m. Still no text. Whole Leather Jacket Man scenario is making me horribly anxious, with a sick feeling in my stomach. The number one key dating rule. Saturday, the 15th of September, 2012. Do not text when drunk. 8:15 p.m. Yay! Telephone! 9 p.m. Oh, hello, darling. My mother. Shit. Tail spinned, wondering if Leather Jacket Man could still send a text while Mum was on the phone. Bridget. Bridget, are you still there? Have you decided about the cruise? Well, I think it might be a bit... I mean, most people from St. Oswald's will be with their grandchildren.
It is a special time of year when people do spend it with the grandchildren. Julie Enderbury and Michael are taking the whole family to Cape Verde.
Well, what about Una's grandchildren? I counterpointed.
It's the in-laws' turn.
Right. Right.
In-laws.
Admiral Darcy and Elaine are actually incredibly sweet with Billy and Mabel, and managed to play it right by inviting them one at a time to rather well-thought-out and short treat-like occasions. But I don't think they could handle having us for Christmas. Even when Mark was alive, he used to invite them to our big house in Holland Park. But he always got a cook to do the Christmas dinner, which he said was nothing to do with my cooking, but so that everyone could relax and enjoy being together.
Oh, though, why would they not relax if I was cooking?
Maybe it was to do with my cooking.
Bridget, are you still there? I just don't want you to be on your own, Mum said. I mean, there's still time to decide.
Great, then we can sort it out, I said. Christmas is ages away.
Now she's gone off to her aquazumba. Wish Dad was here to mitigate Mum and giggle with me about everything and hug me. Wish could get blind drunk on entire bottle of wine.
9:15 p.m. Ooh, just heard Chloe come in from her night out in Camden. She's staying on the sofa bed so she can get to Tai Chi early tomorrow.
9:30 p.m.
Think we'll have small glass of wine now she's here, just to get spirits up.
Alert! Alert! Do not even open wine without wrapping phone up in note saying no texting and putting on high shelf.
9:45 p.m.
Much better now. We'll put music on. Maybe Queen's Play the Game. Gay perspective is always good, especially in musical form. Leather jacket man. Wish he would text me. Then we could see each other and have sensual...
10 p.m.
Maybe tiny another glass of wine.
Alert. Alert.
10:05 p.m.
Love, Queen.
10:20 p.m.
Dancing.
10:20 p.m.
See? It's true.
Love, leather jacket man. You oughtn't go round getting bulked in defensiveness. Love is like a stream.
Do not use words of pop songs to guide behaviour, especially when drunk.
10:21 p.m.
Use? Don't play hard to get. So why shouldn't I text him?
Gah! You see? This is the trouble with the modern world. If it was the days of letter writing, I would never have even started to find a pen, a piece of paper, an envelope, a stamp, and Leather Jacket Man's home address, and gone outside at 11:30 p.m. with two children asleep in the house to find a postbox. A text is gone at the brush of a fingertip, like a nuclear bomb or Exocet missile.
10:35 p.m. Just pressed send. This is fine, isn't it?
Do not text when drunk.
Continuing dating incompetence. Sunday, the 16th of September, 2012. £133. Stuffing feelings.
No, said Talitha, sitting in my living room with Tom, me and Jude. It is not fine.
Why? I said, staring eerily at my text.
So great to see you Wednesday. Let's try get together again soon.
Tom read it out, then snorted.
Well, number one, you're clearly drunk, said Jude, looking up briefly from OK Cupid.
And number two, it's 11:30 at night, said Tom. Number three, you've already told him you'd like to see him again, so you're sounding desperate.
Number four, you used an exclamation mark, said Jude crisply.
And it's emotionally inauthentic, said Tom. It has the gushing, fraudulently breezy tone of a schoolgirl who's persuaded the netball captain to sit next to her at lunch and is trying to force her to be friends whilst attempting to sound casual about it.
And he didn't reply, added Jude.
Have I ruined everything?
Just leave it as the naivety of a newborn bunny amidst a pack of ravenous coyotes, said Tom. Almost immediately, the text pinged.
How's your babysitting schedule? More organized than your spelling? What about next Saturday night?
I looked at them with the expression of an anti-Iraq war demonstrator hearing that there were no weapons of mass destruction. Then I floated up onto a cloud, non-biochemical, of excitement.
How's your babysitting schedule?
I said, dancing around. He's so considerate. He's trying to get into your knickers, said Jude.
Don't just stand there, said Tom excitedly. Answer the text.
I thought a bit, then texted. Saturday night perfect. Just need to obtain a sturdy rope to tether the children.
I prefer duct tape. Came straight back. He's funny, said Tom, and there's just a hint of S&M, which is nice.
We all looked at each other happily. A triumph for one was a triumph for all. Let's open another bottle, said Jude, padding over to the fridge in her baggy onesie and big fluffy socks. She stopped to kiss me on the head on the way. Well done, everyone. Well done. Escalating dating incompetence. On the first date, just go along with what he suggests. Wednesday, the 19th of September, 2012. £134. Pounds gained, 1. Dating rules broken, 2. 9:15 p.m. Chloe can't do Saturday night, and instead of putting my energy into finding someone else, have obsessed and fantasized so much about the dinner and what I'm going to wear and the way he will look up at me when I appear in the navy silk dress, that have not organized anything else. Gah! Text from Leather Jacket Man.
Fancy a movie on Saturday?
Argo? 9:17 p.m. Argo? Argo? A movie is not a proper date. Argo is a guy movie. The navy silk dress would be overdressed at a movie. And anyway, Chloe can't do Saturday and... 9:20 p.m. Just sent... How about dinner?